Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:19 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is December 12th. I thought that today I would start off and talk about financials and banks. Here you have Goldman Sachs breaking out above that $250 area. And this is a pretty substantial breakout, considering that it has spent the vast majority of this year ranging, albeit with an upward bias. But even more important than that is that Goldman is now breaking out to new all-time highs, because its peak back in 2007 was just below that $250 area. And of course, shares like JP Morgan have been trading at new highs for a fairly considerable amount of time, but it is also well, obviously JP Morgan has been doing much better for much longer, and it is somewhat overbought relative to the trend mean right now, but it is above that psychological $100 area. And certainly it has done spectacularly well in just the last few years. So there is the potential that we get some pause of consolidation, but broadly speaking, we're getting rising interest rates, and rising interest rates are positive for banking sectors. And considering that the US has been raising interest rates for almost a couple of years now, albeit at a very modest pace, and are due to do so again this week, then the banking sector has been responding. So, for example, when we look at the regional banks index on a long-term basis, it has been consolidating above the 2007 peak now for the last 18 months. And it pulled back this week, but from the region of its of the peak earlier this year. And as long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now, when we look at the UK, the banking sector has been confined to this long base for the last 8 years, but it has been also prone to these rather acute bouts of volatility, and the most recent one, of course, being associated with the Brexit vote back in 2016. But inflation is picking up. It's currently running at about 3%, which is well above the target set by the Bank of England. Now, the Bank of England has tolerated occasional bouts of higher inflation over the last few years. They've been willing to run inflation hot, not least as a way of eroding the large quantity of debt that remains outstanding. But we can see clearly now that even on a 10-year basis, that the FTSE 350 Banks Index has been doing pretty much nothing at all for the last year. But it has been trading with a mild upward bias, which means that anyone who's been seeking to buy the dips has been prepared to buy it with a somewhat smaller dip each time it is pulled back, and now it is firming once more. If the UK is going to be the second country, which I believe is more likely than not, to begin to raise interest rates, well, then that is going to have a knock-on effect for the banking sector, because their margins will improve, and that they should begin to perform similarly to what we see with the US. The US has, this was something also that we saw with the property shares, that if we look at the S&P 500 home builders, then we can see clearly that they had a lead relative to the UK home builders of about 18 months to 2 years. They were already breaking up and away in 2011, and now they have really taken off over just the last few months. But, for example, if you look at Persimmon, in the UK, then we, or maybe even Taylor Wimpey, we get another example here, because they didn't break out until 2013, really. And then the pace of the advance really picked up in 2014. What that would suggest is that the financial services sector, in a very broadly based way, is trading at perhaps an 18-month lag relative to what's happening in the USA. So therefore, there is the potential that UK banks could start to turn the corner here, and that there is the prospect that they could be returning to positions of dominance. And when you look at, for example, RBS, then, and I think perhaps the best way to do it is to look at it on a logarithmic scale chart, then it has been holding this upward bias since that plunge lower in 2016. And if we take it back to perhaps 2007, we can then see that it is in the confines of a very lengthy base formation. HSBC, which obviously is not exclusively a UK bank, has been ranging in a very volatile manner below 800p for an awfully long time. And considering that the FTSE 100 has already broken higher, then it is reasonable to expect that the banks should be starting to recover, considering that we are just about, well, I suppose not really quite a decade, but really not far off a decade away from the financial crisis, that it is reasonable to think that maybe the banks are on the cusp of doing better if we start to get higher interest rates and they start to get better margins. And we also saw today that in India, inflation came in above expectations. So it is probably also then worth looking at the banks index. And the Bombay Banks Index has paused below this 30,000 level. It has been a reasonably reliable lead indicator for the Indian market over the last few years. It does suggest that we are going to get a little bit of a pause in here. And the rupee has been really quite steady. So we're not seeing a great deal of fright coming through at the prospect of higher inflation in India. Obviously, inflation is a completely different scenario in a high-growth emerging market than it is in Europe or in the USA, who have been trying to foment inflation for much of the last decade. Inflation is a potential problem for investors in India if it were to start to have or at least have an effect on the rupee exchange rate. But what we're beginning to see is the early signs of a return of an inflationary bias. And what that suggests is that interest rates will continue to rise. And if we look at the two-year, then the yield is up to 1.8%. So it is pricing in one interest rate hike and maybe a little bit more between now and 2019. That's also a clear representation of the fact that the bond market is unwilling to price in anything other than the immediate future. They're not willing to price in the potential for three interest rate hikes next year. They simply don't believe the Federal Reserve is going to do that. And yet, we are at a point where we're going to have a fiscal stimulus in the USA, and that is a pro-cyclical set of policies which could have an inflationary effect. So what that suggests is that the bond market is somewhat behind the curve unless they are right in predicting that we are going to have a deflationary outcome. Well, that's not what the stock market is telling us. The stock market is still in a pretty robust shape, and the S&P 500 was at a new all-time high in here today. Now, it wasn't quite able to hold it, and when we look back over the course of the year, the reactions have been getting shorter, but this reaction has been less than 2 weeks so far, so we could have some pause in consolidation. It's certainly not beyond the bounds of possibility that we could get another pause, and the Dow Jones, for example, has been up for four consecutive days. It is becoming increasingly overextended relative to the trend mean, and the most healthy thing would be that we do get some pause and consolidation. The other big point, of course, with the Dow is that it is approaching that big psychological 25,000 level, and that's a natural area for people to begin to consider what next. So that may also represent an area where we could get some pause and consolidation, considering that we are now approximately 2,400 points above the trend mean, which is approximately 10%. So that's generally what people are used to with the US markets, is sitting through a reaction of 10%, and that would represent mean reversion. There was a question today, somebody asking what are the trend-ending characteristics, and acceleration is one of the trend-ending characteristics that we talk about at the chart seminar. And it is reasonable now to begin to think that the Dow Jones is beginning to accelerate, because the pace of the advance has picked up, the size of the reactions has deteriorated, and the length of time that it is consolidating has also contracted. So this is all contributing to the pace of the advance picking up. We're only at an overextension of about 10% right now, so one could only say that it is a moderate acceleration. But if it does not pause around 25,000, then we will be into true acceleration, which would be a trend ending and would suggest that we could be in for a much more volatile phase when that particularly impressive advance, I think, eventually rolls over. When we look at stock markets around the world, then the FTSE has been able to hold this upward bias now for three consecutive sessions. It has bounced pretty emphatically from the region of the trend mean, and there is the prospect that it is going to be led higher by the financial sector, and indeed the mining sector. And the mining sector is back in the region of the trend mean, and it is just beginning to bounce, although it was in negative territory in here today. This is around the area where, if demand is going to be reasserted, then it is certainly around these areas. We have evidence of supply inelasticity meets rising demand environments in the commodity sector right now, but it isn't the same as what we had during the commodity super cycle that began at the beginning of the 2000s. Back then, it was about coal and iron ore and copper, and now it is much more about lithium, cobalt, and nickel. And nickel would really have to be broken down into, I think, the two different types or grades, and nickel sulfide is where we have the supply and elasticity argument. But so far, cobalt and lithium have been making all the running, whereas nickel prices remain very much within this rangy environment overall. But there is, I think, just the beginnings of evidence that nickel prices are beginning to firm here from the region of the trend mean. The fact that we are in a rather impressive environment for stock markets has been putting pressure on the gold price, and it was in marginally more positive territory in here today. But and there is certainly an oversold condition, considering how quickly it came back from $1,300 to $1,250. That was a well-defined range between about $1,300 and $1,270, and very, I think, inert relative to the rather volatile environment that gold normally trades in. So when the breakout came, it was either going to be up or down, and in this case it has been down. Now we have to it needs to at least begin to put in at least one upper dynamic and hold it in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And so far, the impetus of the trading has been lower. When we look at it on a weekly basis, this continues to look like a period of right-hand extension following the Type 2 decline. But these periods of right-hand extension can be lengthy, and the fact that it has failed to sustain the move above the trend mean suggests that we could be in for a more volatile environment from the gold price. I think there is an argument that some of the interest that is flowing into the Bitcoin market is sapping demand for gold, and Bitcoin has accelerated up to these levels. The pace of the advance has picked up considerably in December in anticipation of the launch of futures. Now, so far, the futures have been, I think, not particular popular, but certainly the inquiries on Google for futures trading in Bitcoin has really picked up pace. So there is the potential that we are going to have more trading in futures on cryptocurrencies, and most particularly Bitcoin. But so far, this has been a pause, and we know that Bitcoin is susceptible to very violent pullbacks, and it's hard to see those pullbacks because the price has gone up so much. So I think it is still very useful to look at this on a log scale chart. And the last time we had any kind of pullback was when it was trading around 10,000. So we can see here that the length of time that it spends ranging has contracted, and each of the ranges is one above another, and the pace of the advance is picking up. So if we're looking for any market that has got a great example of a type 1 ending, which is acceleration, then Bitcoin is it. There are stories about people taking out mortgages and extracting equity from their homes to buy cryptocurrencies, and the quantity of money that is flowing into it is really quite extraordinary. And of course, it is global in nature, and there is a substantial amount of Asian money also flowing into it. I'll write more about this in here tomorrow, but I think one of the more important points is that the consistency of this trend has changed. The pace of the advance has picked up. It is an acceleration, and this is a time that people with long positions need to be thinking about what their exit strategy might be, at least to begin to take profits. Because without an exit strategy, people who have been long during the bull market generally end up holding the entire position as prices fall, and end up years later with nothing to show for their participation in the market. So having an exit position really is, I think, an advisable thing to do. And when we look at the currency markets, then the dollar index has encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean, and now it is bouncing back. And if it fails at the region of the trend mean again, well, then we will have had a failed downside break that did not push back up into the overhead range. So it would be more like that we have had a decline that was oversold in the short term and got some distribution in the region of the overhead range. So what happens in the next point for the dollar index is going to be rather instructive. So far, it continues to bounce, and as long as it is pushing back up towards that 95 area, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But if we get a downward dynamic anywhere within the next point, that would suggest that we're moving back into a dollar, or at least I think it would be a decline for the dollar, or a further test of underlying trading, and that could act as a salve for the precious metal markets. And elsewhere in the commodity markets today, Brent crude got right above $65 and was not able to hold it, despite the fact that you had this bullish news about the Forties pipeline being shut down on the Brent field. So there are other factors at play in here right now. And what this suggests is a failed upside break, and it has come down in a dynamic fashion. So if this is going to play true to course, it should come right back down and test the lower side of this range. Obviously, when we look at it on a weekly basis, it is the $60 area was a psychological area of resistance, and now should act as support if this breakout is going to be sustained. Natural gas prices have been coming down in an aggressive manner for most of this month so far, and moved to a new low in here today. We obviously had the explosion at the natural gas hub in Austria, and obviously you had the problem with the pipeline in the UK, and that really rams home the point that Europe's energy infrastructure is old and it is going to need increasing, I think, looking after and maintenance work. But US natural gas prices have been pulling back in a volatile manner. And at $2.68, what this suggests is that there is ample supply, and the winter is not as cold as it might be at this time of the year. But we're at the lower side of a range which has been really quite inert for most of this year, and natural gas is not an inert trading vehicle. So there is the potential that we go right back down and test this $2 area. And natural gas is cheap, and what that suggests is that it could get cheaper from here. And it is a graphic representation of just how impressive the supply surge has been from unconventional gas, and it is a tailwind for economic growth that oil prices, that energy prices generally are accommodative. And if, on the other hand, if we were to see energy prices spiking higher, that would represent a headwind, and it would often lead to being a harbinger of the next recession. So that's something that we can take off the table as long as energy prices are back under control. And meanwhile, there was news today that President Trump wants to send astronauts to Mars, which is another example of fiscal profligacy, and suggests that they will do whatever they can to, I think, to get economic activity moving even in a more brisk pace, which will be great in the short term. And how it's all going to get paid for is probably something that's going to get asked in a couple of years' time. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.